Morris back to pass. Looks end zone. Has his man. Has the touchdown. Terrence Tolliver. Got a shot here. Did he make it? Yes, he did. What a catch. Oh, my. Luke Tasker touchdown.
Welcome to Potsky Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
All right, Mike, let's just dive right into the news. And the big thing that happened since the last time you and I have sat down, did you see the interview with Zach Caleros that he did with Matthew Schnetti for TSN maybe about a week back?
Yeah, I did.
How excited did you get when he said he's hoping to be back for training camp?
Well, pretty excited. You know, he's not a doctor, obviously, and players tend to believe that they're going to come back, you know, sooner than is based in reality. But, you know, it's great to hear that he's coming along nicely with his rehab, and he feels that his knee's getting better and better as the weeks go on. So I'm hopeful that he'll be ready for the start of the season, and you know, he says he will, so maybe he's ready at the start, and or maybe he's ready, you know, a couple weeks later. But either way, I'm happy because I feel that we have a good backup. So, you know, if he's ready for the start of the season, that's awesome. If it takes a couple weeks, then so be it.
Does this change your opinion any on the balance of power in the East? Because it does for me. For me, with Caleros being healthy to start the season, I view the Ticats, as much as we've said the last few episodes how much we've liked what the Argos have done this offseason, if Caleros is healthy, I view the Ticats as the front runner in the East Division.
Well, it definitely gives him a better chance. You know, he's an all-star quarterback. He was the best quarterback last season before he got injured. So, yeah, it definitely raises my expectations if he's ready by the start of the season.
Do you think he will be ready? Do you think he's maybe blown a little smoke? Or do you really think that we're going to see day one of training camp, he's going to be out there slinging it?
I'm not sure about training camp. It was a pretty serious injury. And, you know, I don't think he's lying. I think he believes that he'll be ready. But you just never know with these things. So, you know, I'm not sure about the start of training camp. But I think the regular season, the first game of the regular season, is a real possibility.
Oh, man, I really do hope you're right, because I'm likely going to that game in Toronto. So to see Caleros back healthy 100% or as close to 100% as he'll ever be just gives me the idea that the Ticats can get back to where they were when they had him healthy last season.
Yeah, he's a huge part of the team, and if he's healthy, then this team will be immensely improved compared to if he wasn't.
So his return, I guess is what we'd call it, isn't the only big news. Another guy decided to come back to the black and gold. And this is huge. Emmanuel Davis has re-signed. That really kind of answers a lot of questions that we may have had in regards to that secondary. Now that he's back, that shuffles everything around, and they look just as good as they ever have.
It's a huge signing. He was an all-star last year. He was one of the best DBs in the league. So, yeah, it's great to have him back. And it's, you know, he was looking down south. He was looking for his opportunities in the NFL, but you know, that didn't happen for him, so he decided to come back to the Ticats, and I'm thrilled about it. He was a great player last year, and he's going to be, I'm sure he'll step up his game even more this year. So it's great to have him back and with the Ticats.
It makes me wonder kind of where he's going to play. Do you think he might be the boundary corner, or do you think they'll still stick him at the halfback spot that he seemed to excel at last year? Because now, if you look at the Ticats secondary, you got Courtney Steven, you got Rico Murray, Johnny Sears, Craig Butler, Mike Daly. Now you add Davis into the mix. That's a lot of moving pieces, and I guess versatility has always been the calling card of the Kent Austin, Orlando Steinhauer defense. I'm kind of wondering where he might fit in and what that'll do, the reverberations throughout the rest of the roster. Because I could see, you know, we're sitting here right now, we don't really know who's going to be that wide side linebacker right now. And I think we could see someone like, say, Sears or Murray move down there. There are a lot of moving pieces right now.
Yeah, there could be quite a bit of shuffling in that secondary and the linebacking corps. So if I were in charge of the team, I'd stick him where he was last year. You know, he just had such a great year at that position that I don't see the reason for, you know, changing him around unless there's an injury and you have to shuffle some people around, which, you know, there's guaranteed to be injuries in the secondary. So, you know, I could see him playing several different positions this year, but, you know, everyone's healthy, I'd stick him in that halfback position where he was last year.
Can I talk to you about these one-year contracts? There's been a lot of talk about, especially amongst fans, that this is ruining the league. What are your thoughts on these one-year deals?
You could go both ways. You can go the one-year deal makes the players shuffle around so much that you don't have that attachment to the players from the fans' point of view. But, you know, I think that the players wanted it. So, you know, I don't have a problem with it. I think that there's certain players that'll sign for 2-3 years. The Simone Lawrences of the world, I think he's a two-year contract, and other players have been that way. You know, there's a lot of shuffling going on between teams, but I don't really have a huge problem with it. Just because that's been the nature of the CFL for so long. You're going to lose players, you know, you're going to lose players to the NFL. There's going to be a lot of shuffling in this league. So, you know, I've just grown used to it over the years. Maybe it's a little bit more nowadays because of the contracts. But, yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
Don't you remember when we were younger, back in the mid-90s, that sort of this QB shuffle that always seemed to happen? You'd have Matt Dunnigan and Damon Allen, Danny McManus and Ken Austin and Tracy Hamm. And these guys were always... You know, they were in Edmonton and they were in Toronto. Then they were always shuffling around. Damon Allen played for how many teams in his CFL career? This to me is nothing new. These one-year contracts are a new thing. But when you think of football, and I think Emmanuel Davis even said this in one of the interviews he did after he signed, even if you sign a multi-year deal, there's no guarantee that you're going to live out that contract. Football, these are non-guaranteed deals. So everyone's essentially playing on a one-year contract, and if you don't perform, you get cut. Look at Enoch Mwamba. Mm-hmm. He signed a multi-year deal with the Alouettes thinking he was going to be there for a couple of seasons, and he played, what, 4, 5, 6 games with them, and then they let him go. And he is an all-star player, former number one overall pick, a guy that teams were tripping over themselves last year to sign, and he ended up going to Montreal, and he's still not in their plan. Like, the idea that these one-year contracts are leading to, you know, more player turnover or all that, it doesn't really hold much weight with me simply because guys can get cut at any time with no repercussions whatsoever. So even if you're signed for 3 years, you've really only signed to 3 one-year deals.
Exactly. And like you said about Mwamba, I mean, he's an all-star linebacker and he's a Canadian. You know, that's a huge asset in the CFL. And he was just let go because of the contract, the money-wise. So, you know, you see guys get let go all the time. John Chick, Weston Dressler, you know, huge names that are just let go for money reasons. So, yeah, you're right. The contracts, you know, players can be let go at any point in time. So it doesn't really make a difference to me, the year-to-year contracts.
Yeah, and I think the idea that player movement means fans aren't as invested. Look, I've been a fan of the team for 25-plus years, and the constant refrain is, it's less in football because the name's not out, but it's the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back.
Yeah.
Like, and how many people have come and gone through this Ticats team that you love? Players that you really liked how this guy plays, he's my guy, and then he goes somewhere else. Rob Hitchcock was Hamilton football for how long? He didn't play his entire career with the Ticats. He ended up going to Edmonton at the end. And yeah, we fall in love with these players and we cheer them on, but at the end of the day, and I'm not trying to, you know, demean any of the players, obviously, because if without the players, there is no game. But guys come and go all the time. Guys retire, guys leave. It's just the nature of the game.
Like you said, you're a fan of the team. And yeah, sure, you're a fan of the players on the team, but the team comes first. So the players are going to come and go. You know, it's just, you have to just deal with it. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, one of my favorite players currently is Brian Simmons. And like we talked about before, a few episodes ago or whatnot, when he got traded, I was like super bummed. Mm. But, you know, it's just the way the game is done. It's the way the business of football works. And for people to talk about these one-year deals, like, there's one-year deals in every sport, and guys sign these one-year contracts. In the CFL, it's more they want to leave their options open, I think, for the NFL, and I think that's why Davis only signed a one-year deal. He comes back this year, has another all-star campaign. Maybe he gets a look down south and gets to make all that money. Like, gets to, you know, the Delvin Bros and the Eric Harrises that we've seen leave Hamilton and go play in the NFL. Maybe he's going to be the next guy in line. Terrell Sinkfield, another guy who's got an NFL opportunity due to the way he played. I know why the guys want them, and I'm all for it because I'm for the players making as much money as possible. And if we saw in Ottawa, for instance, they signed Sean Lemon to a long-term deal, and he has to be let go because he was going to look to the NFL, and then that whole thing that happened where he ended up signing in Saskatchewan, and it's just a complete mess with what happened there. If he would have just signed a one-year contract, none of this would have happened. We wouldn't even be talking about it. So I don't have any problems with these one-year deals, and I think people who do are kind of being a little selfish, I think. They're looking at these guys as commodities that they want to keep as opposed to people who need to feed their families.
Yeah, kind of like they're their property and they have to stay with their team. So yeah, I totally agree with you. I don't have a problem with it either.
Yeah, it's the same thing I get when people are like, oh, that guy's not loyal to the franchise. Oh, he was here for so long. Why should a player give a discount, a hometown discount to the team he played for, if someone else is willing to pay him more?
Well, there's not really any loyalty to them, so why would they be loyal to the franchise? You know what I mean? Like, it's a cruel business, and there's not really any loyalty in it. So that's the way it goes.
I look at it this way. If you work for, I don't know, GM, and Ford comes to you and says, we're going to pay you twice as much money to come work for us, is anyone going to say, no, I'm not moving? Oh, I'm loyal to you? Absolutely not. You're gone. It's all about making money. And I understand, like, football is entertainment. It's our entertainment. We dissect it. We love it. We talk about it. That's all great. But it's at the end of the day, it's entertainment. And these people who have to make their living playing this game that we love to watch should be able to maximize the amount of money they can make. So if these one-year deals allow these guys to make more money, I don't see how anyone could have a problem with it.
You know, the one-year deal makes it more attractive for maybe talent in the States that wouldn't have come to Canada if they had to sign a 2-3 year deal, you know? If the one-year deal is more attractive to them, we get more talent here. It goes both ways. So it's good for players that are here that just want a one-year contract to see if they want to go down south. And it's good for, like, American players that are new to the league that want to just come up and play for a year and see what they can do up here and maybe go back down to the NFL if they can. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, like, how many guys that have left the CFL to try the NFL and have come back? Like, Daron Carter signed a one-year deal with Montreal. Mm-hmm. Would he have been less willing to come back if they were saying you have to sign for 2+1? Like, because he's still young, and I think he's got a ton of talent. I am honestly surprised he didn't make it in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like, I know pedigree and, you know, we make fun of Rod Black for the whole Chris Carter. He's the son of Hall of Famer Chris Carter, but he is the son of a Hall of Fame wide receiver. So to have him see him not make it was kind of surprising. But what are the odds that he sits out or tries to hop onto another practice roster or what have you if he's forced to sign a 3-year deal? How long did it take Sam Giguere to come up to the CFL after he exhausted all his NFL opportunities? Because if he was coming up, he would have been forced to sign a longer term deal, which wasn't appealing to him because he still thought that he had an NFL shot. And obviously, you know, that didn't work out, and he's proven to not be that superstar receiver that we all thought he would be. But at the same time, do you blame him at all for wanting to exhaust all possible avenues to make the most money possible? Absolutely not.
No, yeah, and he was there, probably took him, I think it was around 4 years to come back to the CFL. So yeah, at that point, the I think it was a 2-year minimum contract. So yeah, it's just way more appealing for guys that have a shot at the NFL. If they don't have it immediately, they can come here and just, you know, sign a 1-year contract. So it's a lot more appealing for them.
Okay, so this isn't so much news, but it's something I have to get off my chest. Back last week, there was, okay, all the free agent movement that's happened, and we saw Hamilton lose a bunch of defensive linemen, and I've seen some comments out there via social media that, and I'm not going to name any names because I'm not in the habit of calling people out, but that the Ticats championship window is closed. And some of the excuses that I've heard, or the reasons I've heard for this being the case, is that Zach Collaros is hurt, and the Ticats have an aging wide receiving core. Yeah, Collaros is hurt, but as we've seen, Collaros is saying he's going to make it back for training camp, whether he does or doesn't, we don't know yet, but he's going to be healthy. The Ticats just came off losing in the East Final with a fourth-string quarterback, and they came, if Arnaud Gascon-Nadon makes an interception, they probably win that football game, and then the Red Blacks needed a miracle Hail Mary pass to beat an undermanned Hamilton team. That is coming off two straight Grey Cup appearances, one of which, the first one when they lost to Saskatchewan, was not expected to happen. They were coming off being the worst team in the CFL into being a Grey Cup finalist. The idea that they have an aging wide receiving core is ludicrous because they have two wide receivers on the roster that are over 30 years old, and it's Chad Owens and Andy Fantuz. I'm just astonished that you can look at this team from top to bottom on the roster and say that their window for winning a championship is closed. Like, yeah, they might not win the championship, but that doesn't mean that they're not in. To say that your championship window is closed, that means you're not in the hunt. That means they're going to be a non-playoff team this year. There's no way the Ticats are a non-playoff team in 2016.
I was thinking about this the other night, and, you know, there's a bunch of questions you got to ask yourself if you're a Ticat fan. You got the injury, you know, injured players that have been injured for, you know, year after year. You got Fantuz, you got Gable, that's a big question. You got Norwood that has had his injury troubles. And you got Collaros that is coming off a serious injury. Can he stay healthy? Now, there's no proof that he can't. You know, that it might just be a one-off. But you never know. That was a serious injury, and, you know, anything can happen. So there's a lot of question marks on this team, in my opinion. And, you know, they've lost. You know, last year they brought back 22 or 24 free agents or whatever it was. They had, last year might have been the chance to win that Grey Cup with all that continuity coming back. And, you know, they've lost a lot of players this year. Is John Chick past his prime? Can he still produce? Is Chad Owens past his prime? Can he still produce? So I'm not saying that they're going to be a bad team or anything like that, but you got to ask yourself those questions about this team, because, you know, it's not all sunshine and lollipops and rainbows right now. I think there's some serious questions to ask coming into next year.
For sure, but I would argue that there's serious questions to ask of every team. Montreal sits here over the salary cap, and yeah, that means nothing in March, but they have a lot of high-priced veteran players. Are they set up to... They didn't make the playoffs last year. Are they set up to be successful this year? I don't know. Jim Popp is the head coach, and he has proven time and time again that he is not a quality head coach. That is a demerit for the Alouettes. Look at the Argos, and yeah, they brought in a lot of guys, but again, they brought in a lot of veteran guys. We'll get into it in a second. They brought in Justin Hickman. They brought in Brian Hall. They brought Brian Balky. They brought in, these are all guys they brought in from the Ticats. Balky injury troubles. Hickman has not been the same player since he returned from the NFL. And Hall, again, we discussed it last time. Is he going to be the same player not playing beside Ted Laurent? They brought in Gerald Brown, again, an older veteran player. They brought in Josh Bork, who, as an offensive lineman, they can play forever. But again, he's 35 years old. He's an older player. They have some young talent there, but they're also relying on Ricky Ray to stay healthy. And when's the last time he played an entire season? It's been a while. Probably the last time was when? They won the Grey Cup in 2012 was the last time he played a full season, I think. So, again, there's question marks there. And then you look at Ottawa, who had this magical run last year. They lost a ton of talent, Canadian talent, veteran talent. And are we really going to say that Henry Burris can repeat his performance from last year? They lost Jason Moss, who coordinated that offense and put Burris in a position to be successful. Are all those receivers going to go for over 1,000 yards again? 4,000-yard receivers have happened. This is the third time in league history that's happened. The other guy to do it was Anthony Calvillo with a bunch of guys who are borderline Hall of Fame players. Can that there's a lot of questions for every team. So I think this notion that anyone would come up with that the Ticats window is definitively closed because of the losses they suffered or the questions they have is a little silly. I'm not saying that they're destined to win the Grey Cup or that they're guaranteed to win the Grey Cup, but to come to me in late February, early March, and to say that, oh no, you're going to find out this team is no longer championship caliber, to me, that's an overstatement and, quite frankly, completely ludicrous.
Yeah, I don't think the window's closed. I just think that there's some things to be answered once the season starts. I don't think the window's closed or anything like that. I think that this team will be, you know, in the hunt for first place in the East. My confidence hasn't waned there. I just think there's a lot of questions to be answered as soon as the season starts. You know, and you could say that the injury thing for any team, you know. Yeah, what if Ricky Ray gets injured? What if Beaulieu Mitchell gets injured? Injuries happen on every single team. I'm just saying that there's been a history of injuries on this team to really important players. We've seen Gable go down year after year, and it's just he's such an important piece to the offense in the running game, in the blocking game, you know, out of the backfield, catching the ball. So, you know, if these players can stay healthy, they're going to be, you know, I believe a dominant team. But if they don't, do we have the players behind them that can fill in and still be a dominant team? That's the question.
For sure. And that's the beauty of sports. The beauty of sports is that you never know what's going to happen. Sunday is the phrase that everyone likes to use. And that's true of all sports. Anything can happen. But I saw this and it kind of set me off. And having now had a couple of days to think about it, I still think it's a ridiculous statement. But I guess we'll have to wait till the season starts to see if Hamilton's window is closed. I suspect that they will be in the hunt for the entire year. If Caleros is healthy from day one, I think they can be Edmonton-like in their dominance, Calgary-like in their dominance. We saw it last year. They were, 8-3 when he went down? They were going to destroy everybody. They were on a mission.
I was at the game in August. They came in to Edmonton, you know, the defending Grey Cup champs, and they put a whooping on them. So, yes, Mike Riley wasn't there, but, you know, they dominated pretty much the best defense in the league. So they were hot when they had Claros behind center.
Well, and they did it again when Edmonton came here when Riley was here. And Edmonton ended up coming out with the victory, but that was the game that Caleros got hurt in. And they had, just before that, they had marched down and scored a touchdown. They were marching down the field to score again. They were around midfield when Caleros got hurt, a little bit past, going into Edmonton's territory. And it took, again, not to take anything away from the Eskimos because they played a whale of a ball game, but Mike Riley had something like 75 yards passing. You don't win.
One of the worst games I've ever seen from a quarterback.
It was Stephen Giles-esque. It was atrocious.
Yeah.
And Darius Bowman had zero catches, and it took a couple of turnovers by an inexperienced quarterback for Edmonton to win that football game. Again, like I said, I'm not taking anything away from the Eskimos. They won the game, deserve all credit for it, but that game probably plays out a lot differently if Caleros is in there. And then again, that's a game they win, and then the ball just keeps rolling. They were on a roll last year, so if they get, to me, it's Caleros' health, because they did it without Gable and without Fantuz last year. Caleros is healthy. I don't see any way that this team is not again in the hunt, probably playing in or hosting the East Final again this year. It just, to me, it's, I've said it before and I'll say it again, this looks to me like this year is going to be a collision course between the Argos and the Ticats. And I'm really looking forward to those three games that we're going to see between them this year, and probably a fourth that we're going to see in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and all the players changing teams, it's going to be a very interesting rivalry between the Ticats and the Argos, which it always is, but, you know, it's just going to be more interesting this year because of all the players swapping, so it's going to be great.
Wow, you are the master of the segue. Let's get into one of the players that swapped. This, to me, was something I'm pretty sure we talked about the last time we sat down, and it's that Justin Hickman has signed with the Toronto Argonauts. What are your thoughts on this move?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, you jokingly, you know, said, what if Hickman signs with the Argonauts? Because we were talking about, you know, Balky and Hall signing on that defensive line. And lo and behold, the Hickman signs with the Argos. So, yeah, it's, you know, you knew he was gone with the Chick signing, or you assumed that he was going to be gone. You know, he hasn't exactly lived up to expectations after coming back from the NFL. So, yeah, it's basically Hamilton's D-line is now the Argos D-line. So it's not, you know, I don't like that he signed with the Argos, but it seems to be what the Ticats D-line has been doing this year. So, you know, might as well add one more, right?
Yeah, I'm not really that surprised that he went there. I guess, you know, it keeps him in this area, which I think is, he always wanted to stay in Hamilton, but again, like you said, the Chick signing, it was the writing on the wall. And I know people are saying, well, Norwood's hurt, might miss the season, and maybe they could have used Hickman there. But I just didn't see that as a possibility. I think that when they brought in Chick, they had decided that Hickman's time here was over. And he hasn't been that great since returning to the NFL. He's looked dominant in spots, but he never kind of showed the consistency. And I know that there's a lot of comparisons between Hickman and Chick, and they both kind of had the same amount of stats and all that other sort of stuff. So I understand why people might be, well, why bring in Chick when you could have had Hickman? I think maybe, I don't know. It just seems like this was a foregone conclusion even before I think Chick signed, that after last season, I didn't think Hickman would be back. But yeah, to see him sign with the Argos, it's, again, another player that gets to come into Hamilton and you get to boo for joining the enemy. It's just, it kind of adds to the rivalry.
I was really excited when he came back from the NFL, but now that he's gone, it's, you know, I'm not too bummed about it. You know, I like him as a player, but like we talked about before, players leave all the time. So it's just add another one to the list that has changed teams.
Another former Ticat, although most people probably don't think of him as a former Ticat for good reason, that went and had a great career in Saskatchewan, as now out of Saskatchewan, and it's Chris Getzlaff has signed with the Edmonton Eskimos. You're out in Edmonton. Has there been any sort of buzz about this signing? What are you hearing out there?
I've always been a little critical of Getzlaff just because I think he drops the ball too much. He has had a good career, but, you know, just the drop passes has been a real, you know, reoccurring thing in his career. So I think it's a good signing because they lost Chambers. It adds to the ratio. He's a proven commodity, but he's got some questions with the injuries, and the drop balls are a big thing for me. So, you know, I think there, you know, maybe if it happened a couple years ago, there would have been a bigger buzz around Edmonton, but I think he's a little worn down and the buzz isn't as big as it would have been.
Yeah, I think he's a depth signing. I think their starting Canadian receivers are going to be Nate Kuhorn, and I'm actually expecting big things. This is a chance for Devin Bailey to really step up and take, because Chambers is gone now, and this is Bailey's opportunity to get out there and maybe make a name for himself as becoming one of those tight. He's got all the skills in the world, all the talent. He's fast. He can catch. He runs great routes. He hasn't been able to put it all together. Maybe this is his season. I don't see Getzlaff as being like, I kind of look at it in a similar vein to the Chad Owen signing here, as where it's an older player who's maybe felt disrespected, that's looking to maybe just capture a little bit of the past glory. I don't think Getzlaff's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver. He's not going to be a top Canadian candidate at the end of the season or anything like that. But I think it could be, you know, a valuable leadership signing. And maybe, you know, with Saskatchewan saying, basically, we don't want you here anymore, maybe he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder and wants to prove them wrong.
Yeah, that's could be a possibility. And like you talked about Devin, I've been a huge Devin Bailey fan since, you know, he came into the league. I think he played for the X-Men in college. Every time you see him, you know, get in the game and he just produces. He's a ton of potential. Shamont Chambers when he got into the league, he had a ton of potential and he never really lived up to it yet. You know, there's still that opportunity to do that, but I think Devin Bailey could be even better than Shamont Chambers and be a potential 1,000-yard receiver because, like you said, he has a ton of talent and speed and he runs great routes and he catches the ball well. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do. I actually pretty much forgot about him up until you just said his name.
Well, it's also he's now going to get a chance, hopefully, for Edmonton's sake. Mike Riley will be healthy for most of the season, and they can develop a bit of a rapport. It's hard to really excel when you're not the number one or number two option in a passing offense if the quarterbacks keep changing. If you're not the go-to guy, Adarius Bowman, without a doubt, is the go-to guy in Edmonton. So if you're not him, not a lot of passes are coming your way, and that could be frustrating for a receiver. Maybe if Riley gets healthy and now that Chambers is gone, he gets a little bit bigger role in the offense. Maybe we can finally see all that talent coalesce into some actual production.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen this year or next year. He's an up-and-coming star, in my opinion.
What's the weather like where you are right now? This will make sense in a second.
It's been rather warm, actually, hovering around just above zero.
Okay, so you're seeing some grass. You're seeing maybe, you know, a little bit of bloom on the trees. Like out here, we're in double-digit temperatures, and it's really nice. Like it's sweater weather here. And it seems like whenever this type of year rolls around, we end up hearing the inevitable talk of one Tim Tebow coming to the CFL. And it happened again just a few weeks ago when his former college coach, Urban Meyer, was doing some guest analysis for the NFL Scouting Combine. And he said that he has talked to Tim and that if the right opportunity presents itself, he's coming to the CFL. Is it going to just take for Tim Tebow to either announce his retirement from football or die before this story goes away?
Well, I think it's going to be either he announces his retirement or he comes up here and gives it a shot. I mean, enough of the talk. If you're going to come, then come and, you know, just show, you know, I think the Alouettes have his rights. Jim Pop wants to bring him in and he wants to show what he has, then do it. Okay, enough of this talk. Just get it over with. If he doesn't have the talent, you know, if he can't make the passes, then come here and show it. Like, just get it over with. I'm sick of hearing about it every year. If the right opportunity comes up, I don't think there's going to be a right opportunity. He's not going to be a starter with the Alouettes, I don't think. You know, I don't think he's going to be ahead of Kevin Glenn on the depth charts. So, you know, if he comes to the CFL, he's going to have to be a backup for a bit. And if someone gets injured, maybe he gets an opportunity, but yeah, I'm just sick of hearing it. I just want him, if he's going to come to training camp and, you know, battle for a spot. That's about it.
Here's the thing. I've long been a Tebow apologist. And this is funny because when he was in college with the Gators, I couldn't stand him. Hated him, but he was a great player. And he quote-unquote won. He was a winner. But that's a ridiculous idea. Like, guys, stop using his victories as a reason for measuring his greatness. Wins are a team thing, so let's just cut that off at the knees right now. And then this whole professional career happened, and I thought he got a bit of a raw deal because he did perform, and he did seem to have, you know, that Tebow magic that everyone talked about. It's Tebow time and all that sort of stuff when he was with Denver. And then he kind of got shuffled around and never really got a chance to prove himself. But this idea that he's going to be able to come to the CFL and dominate, and that seems to be the consensus amongst all these NFL or American people. It was last year when he was in training camp with the Philadelphia Eagles, and he was one of the last cuts. And reportedly, Chip Kelly said, go to Canada and get some playing time, get some reps, so you can come back here and be better. Why do they think that he's just going to come up here and be given a starting job? You said, yeah, he's not going to come up. He's property of the Owls. The Owls have his hit. He's on the Owls neg list. He was at one point on Hamilton's negotiation list, but they dropped him. So he's going to go to, if he comes, he's got to go to Montreal. And like you said, he's not going to supplant Kevin Glenn as a starter. I wouldn't put him ahead of Kevin Eakin as a starter if I had my druthers. Like, if he's going to come up here, he's going to have to bide his time. He's going to have to not get many reps in practice because, as you know, CFL practices are notoriously short, and most of the reps go to the starters with a few to the backups and so on and so forth. He's not going to come up here and jump the queue above a guy like Rakeem Cato. He would probably jump Brandon Bridge, but that's just because of the stigma against Canadian quarterbacks. But that's neither here nor there. That's a topic for another time. What is he going to gain rep-wise by getting 10 to 12 passing situations in a practice? And he's just not good enough. He can run. But if you look at the quarterbacks in CFL now, the guys that, Caleros and Riley, these guys are dual threats, and Mitchell can run a bit. But pocket passers have also succeeded. Anthony Calvillo, great example. Ricky Ray, another one. Danny McManus. These are all guys who succeeded throwing the football. Guys who, he's a runner first and a passer second, and we don't see those guys succeed very often. I just don't understand this notion that people think that he's going to come up here and automatically be handed a starter's job, because that's just not going to happen.
No, it's just a lack of disrespect from, Americans, American coaches, American fans that don't know the CFL. They just think Tebow's a big name. He's going to automatically be a starter in that league. So it's just a lack of disrespect. They don't know what they're talking about. Tebow's not gonna start in the CFL. That's the bottom line. He's not gonna supplant any of those guys that you talked about. Sometimes I've heard comparisons to Doug Flutie. Tim Tebow is not Doug Flutie. Doug Flutie was a hell of a scrambler, and he was a fast guy. He could run the ball, but he could also, he could also pass the ball. He could make those throws. So there's no comparison between Tim Tebow and Doug Flutie. They're just not in the same realm of player, in my opinion. So yeah, I just want him to come just to get it over with. If he can do it, good on him. If he can't, then this whole conversation will be over and I'll be happy.
The comparisons to Doug Flutie are silly simply because we're talking 30 plus year difference. If Flutie was to come out now, he would probably get an NFL opportunity. We see these dual threat quarterbacks, your Russell Wilsons, your Colin Kaepernicks, your Robert Griffins, even a guy like Andrew Luck can run. Aaron Rodgers is a good guy who can move. The stigma against shorter mobile quarterbacks is no longer there in the NFL. So Tebow, as a mobile quarterback, who's also he's a big dude. He's got a big arm. He's just not very accurate. And you can't be inaccurate and play in the CFL. You make that – and you know what? Montreal should know this firsthand because they have Kevin Glenn. If you are late on that wide side throw, you're throwing a pick six. We've seen it how many times? You have to be accurate. Your passes have to be on time. And I think the only reason we're really even talking about this, honestly, is that – isn't this the most Jim Pop of Jim Pop moves that they could make? This is Amon Green, Lawrence Phillips, Jerry Porter, Chad Johnson, Michael Sam. It's a big name player who Jim Pop brings in to get a bunch of headlines, to get his name out there. And how many of those were successful? Lawrence Phillips was the most successful NFL player that he brought to the CFL. And when Lawrence Phillips, who, if you look into his background, if he's your success story, man, you have a bad track record. But this just seems to be, if he was on a negotiation list of the Rough Riders or the Bombers or anyone else, I don't think we're talking about this. But this, to me, only seems like a possibility because of Jim Pop.
Yeah, you're right. Over the years, he has brought in some big names that didn't work out, that's for sure. The latest being Michael Sam, that turned out terribly. Chad Johnson was a terrible move. You named the players over the years, and it's just hasn't worked out for him. And it's a big Jim Pop thing to do. But yeah, I wanted to talk about Jim Pop because, there's been this talk that, he's just because of Anthony Calvillo, that's the only reason for his success. And over the years, he's been a successful GM for years and years, and people are talking that maybe it was just because of AC. And I don't think that's the case. Well, what do you think about that?
Just because of AC? No. But if you look at his biggest success, it came with Anthony Calvillo, and then it really took off when they brought in Mark Trestman. I think Pop is a good GM. I think a lot had to do, because a lot of his success success also has to do with the fact that the East Division that he was playing in was hot garbage. And if you want to talk about a success with Baltimore, he didn't have to have any Canadian players on this team. And I don't want to disparage Canadian players, but the Canadian talent in 1995 was not the Canadian talent that we're seeing in 2016. And if you look at the team that he put together in Baltimore, it's Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer. Like, I can see some merit in the idea that a lot of his success has been tied to Anthony Calvillo, because ever since Calvillo has left, his teams have not been very good.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. But, you know, one player doesn't make a team. You know, did Eric Toman benefit from having Doug Flutie in 96 and 97 with the Argonauts? Yes. Did, you know, I think it was Hugh Campbell that was the GM in Edmonton when Warren Moon was there. Did he benefit from Warren Moon? Yes. Did the 49ers benefit from having Joe Montana in the 80s? Absolutely. But if you don't have the players around him, around that those quarterbacks, then it's not going to work. You know, you have the greatest quarterback of all time. If you have a crappy team around him, he's not going to produce. So I think that Jim Popp has benefited from having AC, absolutely. But he's brought in offensive talent around him. You know, you got names like SJ Green, Jamal Richardson, Ben Cahoon over the years, you know, great players that he's brought in. You know, great offensive lines that he's built, which he's done, I believe he's always used four or five Canadians on the offensive line. So he's been able to find Canadian talent as well. So I don't think that Jim Popp has been a great GM. I thought he's brought in great talent. He's had great defenses. He's had great offenses. And he's brought in the talent around AC to help him become one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the CFL. So I don't think that there's any merit to Jim Popp was only reason for success was because Anthony Calvillo was there. I think it's a bit ridiculous.
Okay, I can kind of see where you're coming from. Maybe it'd be more accurate to say that perhaps he's just not as successful now because the competition has gotten better?
It's difficult to find that quarterback in the CFL or the NFL. It's difficult to find really good quarterbacks to, you know, lean on and lead your team, because you want to talk about Anthony Calvillo. You know, he wasn't a sure thing when Jim Popp gave him a chance. You know, he came out of Hamilton and basically got run out of town by the Ticat fans. And, you know, he was behind Tracy Hamp for a couple of years, so there was no guarantee with Calvillo. So that was also Jim Popp's eye for talent, bringing in Calvillo when he wasn't a proven commodity at the time either. So there's another cap for Jim Popp.
You can't stay the best forever. At some point, your competition increases. And now if you look at what's going on in the East Division specifically, let's look at the two, for my money, and we've said this now dozens of times, the two teams that I think are going to be head-to-head, toe-to-toe for the division crown this year is Toronto and Hamilton. In Hamilton, you have Ken Austin, who has proven in the CFL that he is one of the best, if not the best, head coaches currently employed. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
He has won in the CFL everywhere he's gone. Like, we're talking 4 years. He's been to four division finals, three Grey Cups, and won one. That's the type of success that is hard to replicate. Then you look at Toronto, and their head coach is someone they pilfered from the Owls in Scott Milanovich, who has proven time and again that he is a great, great head coach. So it was easy, and I don't mean this to demean Pop, but it was easy for him to be successful when you have arguably the greatest player to ever play in this league as your quarterback, surrounding him with a bunch of talent, having immense draft success, where if we look at Pop's draft record of recent years, hasn't been that great, but he was a great talent evaluator and his draft success was unparalleled for a good 10 years. And now you look at the talent that's around the rest of the division, and it's hard to stay on top forever. So maybe it's less to do with the fact that Calvillo is not there and more to do with the fact that the rest of the division just got better.
Yeah, that's true. You know, they were just dominant in the East Division for years and years and years, and there was no one really to challenge them. So, yeah, that could be it. You know, like we talked, Hamilton, Toronto's better. Ottawa's a good team, we're assuming, next year maybe. So, yeah, the East Division has definitely taken a few steps, a few notches up since days where the Owls were just, you know, the only team in the East that had a chance at the Grey Cup. So, yeah, the competition could be a big thing.
There were times when the Owls would have the division locked up by early October, like by Thanksgiving. They'd already clinched the division because the rest of the division was so awful. Mm-hmm. How many of those years that the Owls were going to Grey Cup after Grey Cup after Grey Cup, was Hamilton the worst team in the CFL? Was Toronto the worst team in the CFL? Was Ottawa or Winnipeg, depending on the year, the worst team in the CFL? He deserves credit for the success that he has had, but he also, again, got fortunate in the fact that the teams around him just didn't know what the hell they were doing. That's a credit to him for knowing what he was doing, but also has to be taken into account that your Charlie Tafts and your John Hewards and just all these terrible coaches and general managers and all the sort of stuff that proliferated these other teams helped them get to where they were, and now he's not that much above everyone else. He still gets the benefit of the doubt because he's had one playoffless season in his entire time as a general manager in the league. That is a track record that is probably unmatched by almost anybody.
We're going to see this year, like, if he can, you know, turn this thing around, because I think, I believe he's been a great GM, but he has not been a great head coach. That's for sure. So I think that his legacy might be a little tarnished if this year they really take a nosedive again. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Owls can bounce back and be, you know, a competitive team, you know, going for that Grey Cup again, because the last couple of years have definitely hurt his reputation. Like, I believe that he's still a great GM, and I think that over the years he's been absolutely phenomenal, but you're right, like, the last couple of years have been really tough on Jim Popp, and the next year or the next 2 years are going to really show what he has.
There's a ton of questions that we have. And we're sitting here in March talking about what could happen in November. But, man, it's there's so many moving pieces. There's been so much change this offseason. I think this season in the CFL is going to be unlike any other we've ever seen. And I, for one, cannot wait till this thing gets going.
Yeah, I'm pumped for the season to start. I hope that, you know, the play on the field is crisp. And, you know, there's less penalties than there were last year. I know that's a whole different topic. We could, you know, talk about that for a while. But if they could lower the penalties, I think that, you know, this year could be, you know, one for the ages. I think that the talent's on the field and the players are there to make it a very entertaining season.
So last episode, we eschewed answering some questions because we were fortunate enough to have Jeff Reinbold on the show to talk football with, and I don't know about you, but I'm still kind of in disbelief that we were able to nail such a great guest, and he was so fantastic, and I can't wait to have him on again. But I said then that we would get to some questions this week, and we have got a ton. So in the interest of keeping things short, we are going to answer from now on each week. Mike and I have discussed this. We are going to answer 3 questions a week. Don't worry if you asked a question and it didn't get answered this week. We are keeping all the questions, so if at some point we don't have any, we will eventually get to the question you asked, so do not worry. But these 3 questions this week come from Adam on the 3 Down Nation comment section. So let's start with his first one, and it is, I am not a fan of the signings of both Brian Simmons and Jeremy Lewis. I view both as right tackles. Who do you think starts at left tackle?
Well, I got to go with Simmons. You know, he's played both positions. I'm not sure Lewis has played left tackle before, so if I had to pick, I'd go with Simmons because he just, you know, the 1 year with the Ticats 2 years ago, I believe he was all over the place, you know, playing many different positions. He's a very versatile lineman. So I'd go with Simmons at left tackle and Lewis at right.
I'm with you. I disagree with the idea that both are right tackles. Simmons has played left tackle for the Ticats, as you said, and did so in, I want to say it was 2013, might have been 2012, I can't remember when, but he was phenomenal at the tackle position, and then they moved him to guard where he was an all-star, which is not very easy for an American. Offensive line all-star votes tend to be guys who get them year in, year out, so for him to crack that glass ceiling and become an all-star was no small feat. That was at guard, however. I think he can play left out. I think he can play pretty much any position on the offensive line. There's going to be some Americans brought in at training camp for some competition. Don't get me wrong, but I think as of right now, I would be more than comfortable starting Brian Simmons at left tackle.
Yeah, I totally agree. He just did such a great job in the past, and he's such a versatile guy that maybe his natural position was right tackle. I'm not sure. But like you said, he did a great job in that position in left tackle. So, you know, I'd go with Simmons, left tackle, Lewis on the right side.
The next question we have is, what type of reception will Chad Owens get week 1 in Toronto? As we all know, week 1 to open the season, Ticats at Argos at BMO Field. So what type of reception do you think the Flying Hawaiian will get in Toronto in week 1?
I think it's going to be a good reception for Chad Owens. He didn't do, you know, it's not like he, you know, said screw the team and left and, you know, left in a huff in a bad situation. You know, the Argos didn't offer him a contract. He really had no choice but to leave and sign with someone else. So, yeah, he signed with the heated rival of the Ticats, but it wasn't of his choosing. I'm sure if they offered him a contract, a good contract, a contract that he felt he deserved, he would still be an Argonaut. So I don't think there should be any bad emotions, bad feelings towards Chad Owens if you're an Argos fan. So I think he'll get a positive response.
Yeah, I think he will as well. It will also help that there will be a very healthy contingent of Ticat fans there who will also be cheering for him. I'm sure that there will be people who will boo him, but I'll say it's probably going to be something like a 95-5 split positively for Owens. Like you said, he didn't leave the team in a huff. He didn't badmouth them on their way out. He wasn't offered a contract. And like you said, if he was, he probably would still be in Toronto. This was a move that if he wanted to continue playing football, he had to make. And yeah, I don't really see the Argo fans really giving, like, maybe if he catches the game-winning touchdown, they'll be, part of them will be a little ticked off, but then a part of them might smirk and be like, well, you know what? That's what happens when you let a guy. They'll probably be more angry at the Argos if say, Owens has a big game. Maybe he has a couple punt returns that are pretty deep, and he has a few one-handed catches and scores a touchdown or two. They'll probably be more pissed off at the team for letting him walk than they will be at Owens for actually doing those things. So maybe any boos directed towards Owens are actually will be boos directed towards, like, Jim Barker in the Argos front office.
Yeah, that's a definite possibility.
I remember the way I felt when the Ticats just out of nowhere traded Arlan Bruce, and it was like it kind of made no sense that they dealt this because he was still a top receiver. Yeah, you know, he's weird sometimes in the head a little bit, but he was still producing. He was still a number one receiver, and then just out of the blue, it was like he was gone. And I remember not really having a chance to process that, and it kind of ticked me off because it's like, why would you let this guy go? And neither here nor there. That was years ago, but I remember the first time that he came back with BC, I wore an Arlan Bruce jersey to the game, and I cheered when he caught the ball because I was still a fan. And then BC went on to win the Grey Cup, and I was happy for him. He had like an MVP-like performance in that Grey Cup too. So again, it was more I was angry at the team for letting a great guy like that go. I could see similar sentiments with Argo fans.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really be mad at him because there's nothing to be mad about. Like I said, he wasn't offered a contract, so he went to continue his career in a place where it is close to his new home. So yeah, there'll be a small percentage that'll be booing, I believe.
Now, the opposite end of that spectrum, however, is Ticat fans. Now, you know as well as I do that we are not exactly a forgiving bunch. Mike O'Shea still takes guff for leaving 20 years ago to go to Toronto. He's still hated by Ticat fans. So the inverse of the Chad Owens going to Toronto is, who will receive a more negative reception from Ticat fans? Brian Baelke or Brian Hall? And we can even add Justin Hickman to this list now. So which one of these guys do you think is going to be at the receiving end of more boos? Take into account that the Argos don't come to Hamilton until Labor Day, and it's the only game the Argos play at Tim Hortons Field. So take into account maybe someone's hurt. You never know. So, but who do you think out of those? We'll say those three because we got to add Hickman in now that he's signed with the Argos. Which one of those guys do you think is going to get the most birds flipped in their direction?
Well, I think, you know, logic would say that you couldn't really be mad at any of these guys because I don't think there was much in an effort to re-sign any of them. Now, I don't know that for sure. You know, I'm not in the room with Ken Austin and his...
My understanding is that Brian Baelke was offered a contract, but I guess Toronto gave him more or something. I know that the Ticats were trying to get him back, but he chose Toronto for personal, like, I'm assuming, I don't know for sure. I do know that the Ticats were in on him, but I'm going to make the assumption that the Argos offered him more money.
Okay, so that's probably not common knowledge. So, you know, the whole fan base won't know that. So, you know, if I was going to go logically, I'd say that no one would really get booed that badly. But I'm going to go with Hickman just because he's maybe the biggest name of the three. You know, he didn't work out that well after he came back from the NFL. He's probably going to get the most boos and, you know, the most batteries thrown his way.
You're using logic in a situation that is highly illogical.
Like,
let's be honest. If any player leaves the Ticats and goes to the Argos, they are hated.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Brian Hall. Simply because he's the biggest personality of the three that left. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that, you know, we saw him when he was with Ticats. He's out there dancing in T-shirts. He's dancing shirtless in Montreal in, like, October. Like, I believe he did the same thing in Ottawa in East Final, and it was freezing there. So he's a big personality. He's got a big mouth. He's an impactful player. He's one of those guys that he gets something done, he will make it known that he got that thing done. Yes. I see the boos raining down on Hall. I can see those guys that sit behind the bench at Argos games just chirping him because I feel like he would chirp back. And I saw some interaction with Hall and Ticats fans on Twitter after he signed with the Argos, and it was a lot of people were saying, I said something to him, like, someone was like, oh, you know, maybe we'll give him a nicer reception. And I made the comment, Mike O'Shea doesn't get a nice reception, Hall would expect nothing less. And Hall responded by being like, I would expect nothing less. This is a rivalry. I want to be disliked. So I can see him. I think he really understands the nature of rivalry. I think he's going to be the guy that is just bombarded with boos and middle fingers and some things said about members of his family that I will not repeat here. I've sat behind the opposing bench for a game, and the things that people say to the opposing players, it's vicious. So I can just imagine a guy who's as out there as Brian Hall, what could be said in his direction. And so, yeah, I'm going with him as the guy that's going to get the most heat from Ticats fans when the Argos step back on the field in Tim Hortons Field in September.
I could see that as well. You know, you kind of swung my vote towards Brian Hall, actually. So, yeah, I might change my opinion to Hall getting the most chirps.
Don't get me wrong. Any player that left Hamilton to go to Toronto, that if he makes a play, if it's Brian Baalke with the tackle, you're going to hear boos. Oh, Justin Hickman with the sack, you're going to hear boos. And you're going to hear a lot of them. It's going to be a lot louder than you'd hear for any other player in the Argos. If they played for the Ticats and now play for the Argos, they are going to be booed no matter what they do. If they do player introductions, which they don't do for away teams, but if they did, you know, it'd be like Ricky Foley. He would get booed. And Ricky Foley deserves all the boos in the world. But the boos would be loudest for these guys that played in Hamilton.
For sure.
So all these guys are going to get booed. And I just think that's going to be Hall who takes the most heat from those guys that sit – because the guys that sit behind the opposing bench – are only there to cause trouble. Yeah. That's why they sit there. They love getting it into it with the players. It's an amazing thing. I love seeing it because I think it makes the game fun. But yeah, I just see Hall seems like the type of guy that would just get into it with him. So there's no way that he's not public enemy number one.
It's going to be, you know, we talked about it before. This rivalry is going to go up another notch this season because of the player swapping.
Yeah, for sure. And that first game in BMO, I said it when Owen signed. I hope he has a huge game and scores the game-winning touchdown. And now that that is an actual possibility, man, June just can't come soon enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if that happens, you know, that would be a perfect way to, you know, kick off the season. You know, kick off that rivalry right away, and then you can look forward to the Labor Day game and the rematch. So, you know, this is kind of off topic, but I'd like to see. I know that the Labor Day rematch is kind of a tradition, but I wouldn't mind seeing like an Argos Ticats game on Thanksgiving. Maybe start that new tradition. But anyways, that's another topic for another time.
We can get into that another time. But can you imagine just the first game, BMO Field, Zach Caleros back healthy, throws the game-winning touchdown to Chad Owens, two former Argos hook up in the Argos' new home to beat them? Oh, man, it would be so great. Walking out of that stadium after that happens, oh, man, I would have a strut like you wouldn't believe. I'd look like Vince McMahon coming down the aisle.
Yeah, that would be a perfect way to end that game and start the season.
And this, to me, is a perfect way to end this week's show. So don't forget that you could subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you don't have iTunes, you can get the episode at our new home at podbean.com. Or you can download the Podbean app on your mobile device. I've been given some heads up that there's a little bit of a funkiness with the app and the website. But I've sent some things out. It's getting sorted out. So I'm hoping it's going to be all okay by the time this episode goes up. If it's not, let me know and I'll see what else I can do. And again, as always, if you want to have your questions answered, and even if we don't get to them on the show after, right before you answer, don't worry, they are being written down and will be answered at a later date. You can hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Mike, those Twitter alphabet letters for everybody, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I'm Josh_Smith_82. And as always, if you want to have a bit of a longer question, post it in the comments section of 3 Down Nation. We look there again, keeping all the questions so that we can answer them at a later date. So that is Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.